This is a Stimulus Network podcast.
The Cosmic Shed.
Hello, and welcome to The Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew, and today's episode is all about Assassin 33 AD.
It's the ultimate jihad. Eliminate Christianity by killing Jesus before the resurrection. Ahmed just killed off every Christian that ever existed.
With me today are...
Steve.
And...
Krishna.
And...
Hi.
And I'm delighted to say that for the second time in the Cosmic Shed is the wonderful Jordan Culver. Hello, Jordan.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. So the reason that we're doing this podcast is because Ty did some tweeting about it. Ty, you like
just through your other institution, Ty.
So, look, as some of you might know, I run something called the Bristol Bad Film Club, which means I appreciate a film that is so bad it's ridiculously entertaining. And every now and then I get sent through recommendations. And Dan Izzard of Riggle's social media site, sent me a link to Assassin 33 AD, kind of going, have you heard of this film? And it only took me reading the synopsis to kind of go, right, I'm in. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with the synopsis, just to give you an idea of what this film is about, a group of students discover time travel, and then their time travel machine is hijacked by Muslim extremists who use it to go back in time to stop Christianity from ever happening by stopping the resurrection. And the great thing is being a fan of bad films, faith-based movies are a big part of that. And faith-based films are a wide spectrum. You have everything from, you know, a soldier surviving war because they were saved by God, or, you know, prayer helping to save the church roof, you know, lovely, heartwarming Christian-based films, all the way through to the more far-right ones, such as The Trump Prophecy, which is about a firefighter who believes that the Trump presidency was ordained by God. The God Is Not Dead films, which is all about, you know, the need for school prayer in public schools. What's the new one? The Reliant, I think, where Kevin Sorbo is in a film, and it's basically if the day the government decides to take everyone's guns away and there is anarchy on the streets. And there's also a film with John Voight and Robert Darby, and all about Roe v. Wade. As you can imagine, that is the more far-right element of faith-based films. But faith-based films are a big part of actually American cinema. Studios like Pure Flix and even Walden Media, that partly financed the Narnia films, are a big part of American cinema. So it's very rare, though, that you get a faith-based sci-fi film. And that is why I wanted to watch this film so much, not just for its ridiculous premise, but I wanted to see what a faith-based science fiction film looked like. And after watching it, I had two pages of questions. So I immediately tracked down the writer-director, Jim Carroll, just to talk to him about it, because it wasn't what I was expecting. And at the same time, it was exactly what I was expecting. So I had questions.
We'll go to that interview, because it is a truly beautiful thing. But for those of us who haven't heard the episode with Jordan on before, which was all about the spectrum between science and religion, because Jordan is the creator author of a comic all about that. Jordan, just briefly, can you tell us your religious story?
Yeah, certainly. So I sort of have an interesting, or I guess personal, relationship with films like this, because I used to be a Bible-believing, evangelical, conservative Christian, creationist. And I grew up watching movies like this. They were in my stockings for Christmas. My dad would give me one that jumps out at me right now is one called Unbelievable, which is about a UFO extraterrestrial kind of encounters. And if I remember correctly, I think it's revealed that they're not aliens. It's a part of a demonic conspiracy to lead people away from God. I think that was what the conclusion was. It was the early 2000s when it came out. But I wasn't in it wasn't until my early 20s when I really kind of came away from that belief system. I mean these films are quite extreme even for what I had grown up in. They were quite tongue-in-cheek in a sense, but by and large the beliefs were mine. And yeah, I kind of gravitated away from that really slowly, really disorientatingly and painfully, but I'm happier for it, I would say. And the interest in religion and then now my sort of my contemporary passion is for science. And in a sense, I think that is in a direct kind of relation to that. Having been a creationist, I'm now incredibly interested in evolution, almost can't mm-hmm. get enough of it. And then specifically people's beliefs about evolution or lack of beliefs in evolution, because, you know, there's lots of rhetoric out there about, oh, creationists are stupid, or they, you know, they're not intelligent. They can't understand what's going on, or a lot of suspicions about their motivations, which don't ring true to me having been a creationist. So I like to kind of join the fray and hopefully get involved in a constructive way. But yeah, it was a real pleasure for me to watch a film like this again, because it had been a great number of years, but it was awfully familiar.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I'd like to hear what you thought of it, and we'll get to that. But first, let's hear what the man who made it thought of it.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll, for joining the Cosmic Shed podcast to talk about your film, Assassin 33 AD. But when I was looking at your website, I saw that the original title was Resurrection Time Conspiracy. Can I just ask why you didn't stick with that title originally?
Well, I mean, there was an old saying in Hollywood, if you start your movie with an A and people are searching for stuff, you would have a better chance of being watched on videos. So I just went ahead and said, well, how can I change a name and have an A in the front and make it make sense? And so after it won all the awards and everything on screenwriting, I decided that would be the best thing for us to try to do.
I saw that also in the trailer, that Assassin 33 AD has won more international screenplay awards than any known script in history.
Yes, I mean, I couldn't count them all up, but there were over 60 first place finishes in screenwriting contests across internationally, and it was nominated into probably another 100 some on as an official nomination. So I was very happy with the screenwriting contest.
Yeah, no, it was quite an impressive list from all around the world. So can you tell us how you came up with the idea for Assassin 33 AD? For those of you that haven't seen it, it basically revolves around a bunch of terrorists going back in time to kill Jesus and then essentially removing Christianity from the timeline. So how did you come up with this idea?
Well, I think it's always been my vision to make faith-based motion pictures that are mainly entertaining and fun to watch and intriguing the mind and all that kind of stuff. And so I didn't want to do your normal everyday faith-based. And so I said, well, what can I do that would just make it extremely entertaining, that I could be able to show the life, a little bit of the life of Christ and what he goes through, and then bring science fiction into it. And so this is what I came up with.
Were you aware of any of similar high concept films like this before, like The Final Countdown, where a big modern-day aircraft carrier goes back in time just before Pearl Harbor's about to happen? Were you aware of any similar big kind of genre time travel movies or that kind of cover similar what-if scenarios?
Well, I've watched a ton of sci-fi, yeah. So there were, I don't remember The Final Countdown, but yes, I'm intrigued by sci-fi. I love Star Trek and all those things, you know. So, in fact, one of my favorite ones was when Star Trek came up with the new characters and they changed time so they could recreate everything they wanted to do instead of being stuck with the old episodes.
Oh, the J.J. Abrams film.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, kind of like faith-based films and science fiction aren't really two genres that kind of go hand in hand. So does kind of your love for science fiction and kind of your faith ever butt heads at all? Or because it's kind of two genres that don't often blend together that well.
Yeah. Well, I don't have too much trouble with it myself, but I've gotten a lot of hate mail from people who say I shouldn't have done it. It's blasphemy that I can't do anything to make a fictional story that would interfere with Christianity. And then, of course, the Muslims are unhappy with me too, even though I tried to cover that in the movie. That, you know, these are extremists. These are not typical Muslims, but people want to get all bent out of shape, and so they do.
The science in the film. So I was actually surprised at how much science fiction was going on in the film. I thought it would be a very similar, you know, bad guys go back in time, change the future. But you have, you know, various timelines all splitting off from what you have, and you have various versions of your characters all running around at the same time. How did you plan that out? And I would say that it's pretty out there for what I thought was just going to be a pretty straightforward sci-fi faith film.
Well, I had to create certain timelines to make certain things happen so time could override itself and that it all made sense of two or three time continuums where people were going back. And so it was not simple to plan out all these timelines and have them coordinate with each other and have characters in the same timeline, like Back to the Future. So it got very complicated at times, and even I got confused as I was trying to get all the timelines to work perfectly together. And if you'll notice that I left a couple of timelines stranded.
Okay? Yes. Yeah.
So there is a timeline where Felix goes into the apocalypse in the future.
Yes.
And I just leave him there.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
And then there at the very end of the movie, there's a timeline where the scientists go 30 years into the future to get medical help. And all of a sudden they find out that the Antichrist exists during that time, which is cloned from another timeline when Ahmed takes the DNA from Jesus and he goes back to the present. So a lot of those timelines that we have never close. They just keep going.
Every sci-fi, well, every time travel film has its own kind of unique rules. So when you were coming up with your own rules, did you talk to any kind of scientists about this? Did you try and make it, and this is a word that's, you know, not really applicable to a time travel film, but accurate in any way?
I did as accurate as I could, but I always saw time differently than most of these time features were. Okay, somebody changes something and instantaneously see everything changes in the future, or it doesn't, you know, picture of a person fades out. I'm going, no, there's just no way that could happen. I mean, time has to override itself just like the speed of light, just like a hard drive. And so I thought, well, if I use that scenario that time has to override itself, then it also allows me to have the thrill of the characters being under a time rush where they have to get something done in a time. Otherwise, they're going to disappear and that timeline is going to end.
Yeah, I think that kind of, that's also, have you ever read the book Sound of Thunder?
No, I have not.
It's, you know, time travelers go back to the time of dinosaurs. One of them steps on a butterfly and they change the future. But in the film version of that, there is also kind of time takes, you know, a while to change. There are waves of time that kind of come through and change things after a while. It doesn't happen instantaneously. So I was kind of surprised to see that in your film as well. So also the plot kind of comes around, they're working on essentially a transporter, a space displacement device. And your character Ram manages to turn that into a time machine in 3 days. And not only is it a time machine, so in Back to the Future, time changes, but people stay the same. You're also beaming people into the Middle East, and at one point directly into the tomb of Jesus Christ. When you were kind of coming up with that, was it just kind of like, this is what the plot needs? Science is just going straight out the window at this point?
Well, there's a little fictional liberty there going on, of course, you know. But he did not create the time machine 3 days. So I think he got the timeline off on that a little bit. So they'd been there several months working on this project, and then some more time went on. But then after he created the initial transfer, then he had 3 days to make it so you could transfer humans.
Right.
As far as how do you transfer somebody in time into the tomb of Jesus when we're not really exactly sure where the tomb of Jesus is, that was a little bit of a stretch.
I loved that interview. Thanks, Ty, for doing it. There's more of it coming later in the podcast. And it sort of changed the way I thought about the film, to be honest, because I hated it. And I didn't enjoy watching it. And I was disappointed that someone had bothered to make it. And then I heard that interview and I was like, okay, I get it. I get where he's coming from. I can see where his worldview fits. I can see what he's thinking, and good on him for giving it a go. But we haven't heard from Steve or Tushner. So Tushner, what did you think?
It wasn't at all what I thought it was going to be. I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than you did, Andrew. I think you were already halfway through. You were like, I'm done. Can we be done with this? Do we have to watch the rest of this? Whereas I was just like, I was along for the ride. It was perfectly acceptable Tuesday evening TV watching. Yeah, I kind of felt like it was a film of two halves. It felt half of it was like almost ridiculous, over earnest, naive, faith-based stuff, and the other half of it felt like it was trying to troll itself. It was like Life of Brian, and so I couldn't figure out what they were going for. I couldn't figure out the angle. I couldn't figure out if it was like for or against the whole story. They're kind of, and like just when with some characters I thought, oh god, that's just so stereotypical, it's awful, but then they kind of changed or did something a bit weird or different. And you know, apart from the baddie, who's obviously like a very traditional baddie, I would say there was nothing surprising or entertaining about him, really. The so-called good guy annoyed me to no end. Yeah. I did not like him. He was a right now I won't say the word, but yeah,
twat.
It was very annoying. Yes, real twat. Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah,
on the
totally.
Okay.
This is the internet. We can do what we like to.
Right, dickhead. Thank you, Steve. I couldn't get behind him at all. He just annoyed me throughout the film. My favorite character was Simon. Simon, without too many spoilers, was the one who had the amazing Terminator throwback line.
Oh, Simon, yes.
That's how I remember him.
Yes.
Simon.
Fair enough.
I think I'm reasonably with Tushner on this one. I think there were a lot of issues with the film, but I did find myself enjoying watching it. I'd love to know how the budget for it compares to mainstream movies, because the sets were fine. The CG was mediocre, but no worse than some mainstream movies that I've seen. The acting was questionable in places, but then again, when isn't it? I can talk a lot about the plot and some of the directorial and writing decisions there, and I could dive into the science, if you can call it that, till the cows come home. But yeah, it wasn't I didn't want to not get to the end of it. If that's a compliment about movie.
I don't think
it's a low bar.
there were a few things that made me go, oh, okay, interesting, in terms of a sort of, whoa, hang on a minute, did they go there or why did they choose to do that?
Yeah.
Sorry, Steve, I was just going to say, did anyone look up his IMDb to see what else he's made?
Yes.
No. Yeah. I'm on the IMDb ratings page. I can give you a summary of that.
Yeah, no, but I was really hoping Ty would bring that up while he was talking to him. This guy is the producer and director of Marriage Boot Camp, the Bridezilla's version, which is this weird American reality TV show where, like, I don't know if it's famous people. I think there's a version with famous people, but like celebrities or just regular people who have, well, from the sounds of it, bad marriages, go to boot camp to save their marriage. Wow. And he's the guy who makes this. And apparently he's like also the host of it or something. I remember seeing. So yeah, in my mind, I was just like, of all the things that I would have expected the person who wrote and directed this film to have done for his like day job, Marriage Boot Camp the Bridezilla's version.
Well, is that quite a popular show in North America?
He's a producer, so he oversaw that and directed it, and also Marriage Bootcamp reality stars. So the actress that plays the wife at the beginning, Heidi Montag, she's kind of like a famous reality star in America. I believe she was in The Hills, amongst other things. So he kind of touched upon that, and he's done some kind of like poker nights in America that he's directed, and he's directed another faith-based film called Evil Behind You. But yeah, I kind of get the impression that this is more of a self-financed, maybe from some financiers. I mean, it's not a studio production, so. But yeah, I was very much aware of his background before I interviewed him. I definitely did some research into what he had done before, because I was intrigued by everything about this film. You mentioned that you have had a lot of hate mail. Can you tell me about what kind of reaction the film has had generally, both from people of faith, people, you know, secular viewers? What's it been like, the feedback across the spectrum?
Well, I think if you go on the IMDb and you look at the ratings of the film,
yeah,
it's either a 10 or a 0.
Right.
I mean, the curve looks like this. It's kind of crazy. So I think I had like one of the most hated movies in the world and one of the most loved movies in the world. The self-righteous, hypocritical, judgmental Christians, they're all been out of shape, of course, because you're messing with time and you're messing with Jesus and all that kind of stuff. And I get that. I knew that was going to happen. I didn't think the Muslims were going to be so upset, because I tried to cover that in the film when I said a couple lines like, Muslims wouldn't do this, only extremists would do this. And originally when I was writing the script, I thought, well, I'll use an atheist, you know, that way I don't step on anybody's religion and that kind of stuff. But you just couldn't get the incentive for an atheist really to want to go back in time and kill Jesus off. There would have to be a lot of hate and drive for that to happen.
Mm.
Whereas if you have an extremist, it makes sense. It makes sense that they would want Jesus to be remembered as a prophet, because that's what they believe, and that the disciples created the resurrection myth that he was the Son of God when he was resurrected.
Yeah.
So it all made sense to me, and I wasn't trying to step on any religion, but man, oh man, there was like the day before the movie came out, there was 80 reviews written overseas. Okay. They couldn't even see the movie yet. Okay. And they give it all zeros, and then they clicked helpful on each other's links. They did all these bad reviews, and all of them were based on the trailer. And so my theatrical rating was of 9.3. The next day when I looked on IMDb, when we're getting ready to launch, it was down to a 2.2. And so Amazon took my link down and everything, because if you get rated too low, they'll scatter you off the page. And it was like, oh, it's so depressing to have my baby destroyed by people that couldn't even have seen it yet.
Sure. So. Surely you had to have expected this to a degree. I mean, your film does have a scene where the disciples are killed by machine gun fire. And then, you know, you're... the character Brand, who, spoilers, does start the film as a man of faith, in that scene he ends up putting two bullets into Jesus's head. So you should have expected probably some sort of kickback at some point.
Yeah, I thought controversy would probably be pretty good for it, you know? And so I'm not sure it turned out that way, but I think my message in my movie is having a lot of impact. I'm getting a lot of positive emails too. So.
Okay. Who are the positive emails from? Are they people of faith? Are they kind of genre fans who are like, you know, this is just a fun sci-fi film? Is it kind of like a certain audience block that seem to appreciate it?
I think the average Christian loves it.
Okay.
I think sci-fi buffs, I've been getting some pretty good feedback on the sci-fi buffs, and some podcast people have been doing it, and they're just amazed at the way that everything was intertwined and how it happened and everything. And so those people seem to enjoy the movie a lot. It's just the extreme one way or the other, extreme Christians, extreme Muslims hate it.
Jordan, what did you make of it?
Well, firstly, I was just going to compliment Ty again for the questions that he was asking, because I think that that does come through in, it would have been really easy to try and, you know, just rib the guy, but instead, you know, it's much more interesting to get thoughtful and sincere questions and therefore answers out of the person, you know, because I think, yeah, as listeners will agree, you learn, you get quite an insight into a lot of what was happening in this movie, or at least what the intention was. And I think it's the thought that counts for this film. Yeah, I mean, I like Ty, and I think most people here, I love a bad movie. So Andrew, I'm not with you on that at all. I fully enjoyed watching this. I there's no way I could have gotten halfway through this movie and then stopped watching it, because I wanted nothing more than to find out what was going to happen. Not to mention the fact that it's a really slow burn to get to the actual premise of the movie. I mean, it goes in quite a lot of depth in not necessarily establishing the characters, but just a lot of backstory in terms of the development of the technology in the laboratory. You can tell that there's a lot of sci-fi fandom that he's trying to incorporate. He must be a big fan of Back to the Future and that kind of stuff. And I don't know, weird science maybe, in terms of just a lot of the lab scenes. And it had a lot of that, the like sort of 80s cheesy sci-fi vibe, which I took as maybe being kind of earnest, but maybe it was accidental because of the low budget confines. I'm not sure. But yeah, like a lot of people, I think it was very different than I thought. The trailer makes it out to feel like it's going to be sort of like a Tom Clancy, you know, Michael Bay style action film, which is not at all. It is, I think. Self-awarely tongue-in-cheek. It takes the subject matter kind of as a jumping off point to just kind of have fun. And the person who wrote it happens to be a very committed believer in Christianity. And so he's writing what he knows. He's writing what he thinks is valuable and important. But again, there is, yeah, like you said, Tushner, there's that Life of Brian aspect to it. And it's comedic to us, and I think it was probably the intention. Jesus is wearing eyeliner, for example, and that's, I don't know if that's
Can we please just call him Jared Leto Jesus? Because that is all I can see. I saw someone else say that on Reddit, I must admit, and then I couldn't unsee it. And I think I convinced someone else that Jared Leto was actually in this film, and I had to be like, no, just me.
That would be great. From a Christian perspective, I mean, it comes up in the interview and it sheds a lot of light on it, because while I was watching this, I was thinking, surely, it's quite irreverent from a Christian perspective, because again, spoilers, like they tap two bullets in Jesus' head in the Garden of Gethsemane. Like this is not the most reverent way to treat the Son of God. So I was thinking, you know, in the kind of church tradition I was raised in, it's what the writer referred to. He said they were extreme Christians. And I was thinking, oh shit, that's really interesting. Cause I think a lot of people would think that he would be an extreme Christian, right? Making a movie like this. Mm-hmm. And yet he was feeling, I think most of the backlash was coming from who he calls extreme or hypocritical Christians.
This is backlash at the treatment of the Messiah in this movie.
Yeah, in terms of, you know, it's a blasphemous film, for example, like that you could undo, God's work in that way. I mean, it does seem like a crazy premise. I couldn't wrap my head around it. If he's assuming he's the Son of God, you go back and you kill him, but that will then be the death from which he resurrects. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get where, but I suppose. From a Muslim perspective, he didn't actually resurrect, so they're banking on that one.
They addressed
it
in the plot, didn't they? They sort of had him dying for the future people caused time, and saying all the sorts of things that go along with the biblical death. Hmm.
It did seem quite confused, because the man that actually shoots Jesus is a Christian who suffered a loss and is angry at God and has turned his back on God. And the Islamic extremists, they even have a very shoehorned in scene where the terrorists are like, but Jesus is a prophet, you know, we can't kill him. It's like, oh no, we just want to show that the resurrection is a sham. So they're happy with getting Jesus crucified, they're just going to stop the resurrection, whatever that is. But then if you're stopping it, then surely you're proving that he is the Son of God. But at the same time, you've got the leader of the assault team just gunning down the disciples and Jesus, which wasn't his mission in the first place. So it's all very confused about what they're attempting to do. And I think the writer-director kind of wanted to have his cake and eat it by kind of getting those more controversial elements in, having that scene in where he's going, look, I'm not saying all Muslims are bad. Jesus is a part of Islam. I'm going to have that in so people can't accuse me of being Islamophobic. I'm also going to have the guy that kills Jesus be Christian.
Yeah.
It's very... He's trying to be even-handed, and I completely understand where he's coming from. It doesn't necessarily work. But when I was going in to watch this film, I'd read so much about how racist the film was, and I don't agree with that.
He seemed very aware of that, even when watching the film, because there were some really overt things there, like making it very, very clear, explicitly stated, that it was a group of Muslim extremists, definitely not mainstream Islam, that was doing this.
But then there were also
some crazy stereotypes.
Stereotypes is the issue, and I did ask him about that. For example, your main villain, his parents were killed by Islamic terrorists, and he should kind of, you know, it would make sense that he would grow up hating religious extremists, but they kind of have a throwaway line where it's like, must be Stockholm Syndrome, that's why he's like this. And also having the one black scientist, he's just joking around and going, hey, Jesus, loved your movie.
Yeah,
That regard, I would say that wasn't great.
I was getting some serious Chris Tucker vibes from him. Pretty rad.
I thought I saw more racist bias in the film than religious bias. You know, because I think it's easy to get that confused, but then you have to kind of be like, right, Christianity and Islam aren't racist. And so you kind of got to remind yourself of that a little bit. And so on the religious bias aspect, he, like you say, tried to be really even-handed, but it was, and not just the racial bias, like the most obvious example of that was Simon, who was trying to be four different characters at the same time. So he's supposed to be this Ivy school, whatever, going top-notch physicist, but he still talks like he's in the hood, you know.
But apparently he's also a frat boy, remember at
he's,
the end?
Yeah, exactly. He's also a frat boy. But then he's also like, he's also clearly very religious, or like, you know, really wants to save Jesus or whatever. And yeah, and I mean, obviously there's the racism in the film, and then there's the sort of racism in the background, as I like to think of it, which is a little bit, you asked him about, Ty, about the casting, right? For a lot of the characters, why like all of the people who even played the Muslims in that were like not actually Muslims, they were Hispanic people. So that, you know, all brown people kind of thing, it's fine. And he kind of nicely just blamed that on the casting director, didn't he? He was just like, I had nothing to do with that, you know, we couldn't find anyone.
The right person for the right job, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, something like that. Brown people, it's fine, they're all brown.
We're all interchangeable.
If you're not white and you're not black, everything in the middle is just a blur. It's fine.
It's like the Dulux colour chart. It's like, whatever.
But one thing that really, I mean, I was kind of laughing while looking at it, but it's quite bad. And it says, it's director's comments, is if you look at the casting page on their website, have you seen the comments on there about how he describes the different people?
So, yeah, he walked in, he was the best Jesus I could have asked for.
Are you Jesus? It is I.
And Jason is the best Jesus ever. So I'm guessing Jason is a better Jesus.
Second best.
Jesus. Well, no, he's very emphatic. Best Jesus ever. That's quite something. So that's Jason for you. He has a hilarious line about the actor Morgan Roberts, who plays the hero, the scientist Ram. He says, Morgan ended up having 7 scenes where he had to evoke emotion and cry. He busted it out every time.
Okay.
Nothing really much about the actor Lamar Usher, who plays Simon, just that he's warm and funny and he's so nice, which is, you know, fair enough. Then we get to Cesar De La Torre, who was the actor who played Felix, who was one of the scientists, and who didn't always have the best fate in the film. So these are, and I'm just reading this out, so this is verbatim. I needed a real nerd to play the role of Felix. Caesar was the perfect choice. His accent is actually real. Caesar was awesome at playing the role, but there were times that we struggled to understand him. After all, he only just moved here a few years ago and had to learn English. Ask him to say theology.
Unfortunately, we can't because we haven't got an interview with him.
It's
So
can we get a one question interview with him?
No.
Oh dear.
The thing that struck me when thinking about the stereotypes, particularly the Muslim characters, was actually that aligns quite well with a lot of mainstream American movies from the last 20 years. They weren't too different from even things in like some Marvel movies of the Islamic terrorist antagonist,
yeah, sort of cartoon character.
Yeah.
What was that Clint Eastwood sniper movie with Bradley Cooper? American Sniper. I mean, that certainly is kind of monolithic and it's embarrassingly overt bias. I almost walked out of that one. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It doesn't take just bizarre B movie, well, like Z movie, Christian films to have that kind of, have those sorts of stereotypes.
It didn't strike me as more stereotypical or discriminatory or anything than a load of other movies that I've watched.
In fact, it did go out of its way, as we've commented a few times in the film. It went out of its way to try and make the case that it's not being discriminatory.
I'm not being racist, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Although I will say, the line took me by surprise when they said, it was for the third time, but why would Muslims do that? And then he says, they wouldn't, but these are extremists. I wasn't expecting that line, and it's actually a pretty pithy line, but I didn't expect that line in this film.
But it's almost like they were patting themselves on the back about it.
Mm. It is, but... I don't want to defend this film in kind of in, you know, giving it too much credit and saying it's great, but for the audience that I feel this film is made for, that's almost positively, you know, stand up applause worthy, because these films are going out to a certain Christian demographic where it's like God, country, everything else. It's like it doesn't have to defend other religion. The hero in this film is a Jewish atheist. Jim Carroll has made some interesting choices in this film.
They're basically, from his perspective, they're all for sort of practical story reasons. Or, you know, he sort of explained, I really thought about it, and the only bad guys that actually made sense in terms of motivation would be Muslim extremists. It can't be atheists, because why would they want to, you know, if the Son of God's not real? And, you know, there's a rationale in his mind as to why he made these choices.
Yes.
And I think, you know, Ram Goldstein is the good guy who's the atheist, because I think, you know, he thought it would be over the top cheesy if it was just another Christian main character. So let's bring some balance. Let's have like a funny, cool atheist nerd.
Let's hear from Jim Carroll.
Let's just skip to the end of the film. Through your hero's actions, they end up being characters in the Bible. So I guess my question to you is, before they go back in the Bible, I mean, to us, there is a Simon in the Bible that helps Jesus with his cross. So before they go back, was that in the Bible
or were they always meant to go back? Is it a predestinational paradox, or through their actions do they end up in the Bible, or were they always meant to be in the Bible? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes sense that you could kind of do it either way if you wanted to, you know? If however, because they correct time, spoiler alert, at the end, right. Okay, those events would have never taken place. So therefore, it can't be them as the real characters. But it just added some fun to the plot to put those characters back there in biblical time, have them have the same names, and having one guy run naked in the wilderness and all that kind of stuff that was in there. By the way, that is a scripture, like Mark 14:51.
Yeah.
Where a man following them and that nothing but a white linen robe. Was they tried to grab him, he ran naked into the darkness. Well, nakedness back then would have been in underwear. And so I added that in, but it was really hard to add in. I had to get that white lab coat back there and have Ram only wearing the white lab coat. So it was one of the harder parts of the movie to get worked in.
There's also various bits where Ram sees himself, such as when he comes back to the future, saves his parents. But then surely, if his parents aren't killed, there's no reason why Ram would ever have gone back in time in the first place. So are you aware of paradoxes like that? Or are you just kind of like, our hero needs to save his parents? That just has to be done.
No, I think I paid attention pretty much to every paradox and every time loop and continuum. I think I covered them all pretty good.
Okay. The other one, obviously you mentioned that you leave Felix in the dark timeline, the timeline where Christianity doesn't exist. And I was wondering if this would be touched in the film, because obviously a world without Christianity, that would impact, you know, art and Western culture. But Felix says this is a world without forgiveness, implying that, you know, the emotion of empathy and forgiveness, that just doesn't exist in a world without Christianity, which is a pretty bold claim. Did you ever have any kind of reservations about that?
No, because I wasn't talking exactly about what you're talking about, okay? For example, Christ taught that 5 times that you need to forgive others, mm-hmm. whether they deserve your forgiveness or not. And prior to Christ coming along, the Jewish law was an eye for an eye and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right, okay.
So when Christ came along, he said, no, you have to forgive other people 7 times, 70 times, which is infinitely, no matter how many times a person harms you. So when I was talking about a world without forgiveness, I didn't mean, yeah, there's people still going to forgive other people. But the whole concept of forgiveness that Christ taught is a very strong and powerful one, that you have to forgive people that are hurting you and hurting your friends and hurting others, because forgiveness really is a gift for yourself anyway.
Hmm. And that forgiveness is obviously a theme that's carried throughout the film. And I'll be honest, I was wondering how you were going to redeem the character of Brand, or, you know, Barabbas, as he ends up becoming, because after losing his family, he seems to undergo a massive change. He's okay with the torture of Ram and his parents. And, you know, he's kind of blaming God for all his actions, even though he's standing by and not doing anything, and ends up killing Jesus in one timeline. Were you ever worried that that character does so much heinous things that not only would the characters not want to forgive him, but the audience would not want to forgive him?
Yeah, I think, I mean, shooting Jesus, a spoiler again, putting him in a body bag, a couple of things that happen are pretty atrocious if you think about it. So, but I think what happens, and I've seen this in a lot of people, okay, they express that they have faith in God and they love God and all this kind of stuff. Then something happens and they just become bitter, angry, mean people that want to get vengeance. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I wanted to go ahead and take Brant to. So it's realistic, instead of, if you watch a bunch of the faith-based movies, they're so sappy where somebody turns away for just a little bit and doesn't do anything really bad, and then they have the salvation experience and they come back and everybody's crying and all that kind of stuff. And that's not what I wanted. I want more like a real life situation. Yeah. And it's the same thing when you got ram at the bottom of the Christ at the cross, yelling, Jesus, why don't you come down there and heal somebody? Why don't you show your love? Why don't you do something? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us go there at times when we're really hurting. It's like, where is God? Why doesn't he do anything?
But I think for Ram, because he's an atheist, it almost kind of like, at the same time with seeing what he's seeing, he still completely doubts everything that he's seeing. And I also feel that maybe this was completely unintended, but in the resurrection scene, when the body of Christ disappears, it does in the same manner as the teleporter. So I was kind of wondering whether you as a director were leaving it up to the audience on whether the resurrection actually happened with the disappearance of the body, or whether the body was just transported somewhere into the future.
Well, I think the audience figures it out pretty quick because Jesus shows back up.
Yeah.
Okay. But I wanted to leave a doubt in Ram's mind and not give him the positive, oh, wow, Jesus just was resurrected, therefore I should believe kind of thing. Because I don't think people should believe based upon scientific facts anyway. Because okay. I don't think you can prove Jesus is God, and I don't think you can prove Jesus isn't God. And even if you could, I don't think that would change people's belief system very much.
There was another, let's just say, controversial aspect of the film where you find out about Ahmed's backstory, our villain, the man who wants to wipe Christianity off the face of the earth. And you find out his parents were killed by Islamic extremists. And then Ram just kind of says it must be some sort of Stockholm syndrome, which doesn't really explain. Did you ever think about maybe having his parents killed by like Christian extremists, like maybe they were killed during the Bosnian War and maybe that had shaped it? Or because it is a Christian faith film, did you have doubts about showing faith on faith violence where it was Christians that were the main aggressors?
Well, I thought about it, but again, the a Muslim that converts to Christianity back 20 years ago, okay, that was like a big bad deal, and then maybe they would have been killed by extremists and that kind of thing. So it made a lot of sense to me that I would go that direction. I had a lot more backstory, but as you know, when you write scripts and they become movies, you got to cut like a lot of footage. And so there was a whole lot of scenes that made the movie slow down a little bit and made it easier to understand. But we had to, when we got it where we wanted it, we had to cut 45 more minutes.
Yeah.
So when you see it jump from all of a sudden we got to save Ram to all of a sudden them running into the control room together, it's kind of like all that footage got cut, you know?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the film has got caught in some controversy for your portrayal of Muslims. You said you throw in some lines there where one goes, you know, obviously Jesus is a prophet in Islam, but then they kind of go, well, you know, we're just going to prove that the resurrection is a sham. But I noted that a lot of the actors that play the bad guys are actually Hispanic. Did you try and court any Middle Eastern actors to play these roles? And did you find a lot of pushback from them?
No. We just went out and had a casting director do all the casting, and I made the final choice on the ones that I wanted, but I didn't have any pushback on anybody.
Okay. Also, the character of Simon, he seems to love Passion of the Christ. as a scientist, though, should he really be bringing that up to Jesus? Because obviously, not only is it wholly inappropriate about telling him about how he's witnessed his own torture scene, Jesus doesn't know what a film is. It seems a little bit off for the man who's working in a top secret science laboratory.
You know what's kind of strange about it? Originally, I wrote down some stuff about the movies, and people who read the script would say, Jesus would know about movies, Jim. Jesus would know everything there is to know about the future. You're making Jesus look stupid having this conversation with Simon, because he knows all this. And I go, no, Jesus is a human in flesh. He doesn't know exactly what's going on because that's being covered from him. So there was a big argument amongst my friends on, okay, would Jesus be all-knowing and know what a movie is, or is he only going to know what's in the moment? So I don't think you're ever going to find a good answer to that one.
That's an interesting theory if some of your friends believe that Jesus knows all and then he's kind of, you know, living 2,000 years ago and isn't creating vaccines, or he knows about films, but he's like, you know what, electricity could change a lot of people's lives here, so could irrigation, but I'm not going to implement that. That's interesting. That's interesting. I hadn't even considered that.
If you think about it too, Jesus like would have been the ultimate X-Man. He could change lying into water. He could resurrect the dead. He could heal the people or make them sick. And he could throw demons into pigs. I mean, he could change the weather, for Pete's sake.
Very random powers.
Yeah.
Just can change the weather, walk on water, knows about cinema in the 20th century.
Can speak English?
Yeah, that's the other thing. So they go back and... Was it ancient Greek or I'm tripping over my words. What's the language?
Arabic?
Not Arabic. Aramaic. There we go. Okay. Ancient Aramaic. What made you think, obviously, that, well, Jesus is going to have to speak English, they're going to communicate with him, the idea that Jesus understands all languages?
Because that kind of went to... if you go to the day of Pentecost,
okay,
the disciples were able to speak in all kinds of different languages they'd never heard before. Okay, so obviously, if Jesus is God of all people, he can speak every language. And also, Jesus would have no time factor. God would have no time factor. So if God wants to be in the future right now, he can. If he wants to be in the past, our past, he can. So I didn't think that was going to be much of a problem on sci-fi using God.
Fair enough. So one other thing, and this may sound like I am teasing one of your cast members, but I feel as a representative of the United Kingdom, I do have to query.
Oh boy, here we go.
Of Bran's wife. It has to be asked, sir. The British accent. How do you feel about its portrayal?
Okay, so that got messed up, okay?
Okay.
Because she only used the British accent in one line, okay? And it's when she said, "Be my hero, darling," or whatever she said, all right? That's sure. The only time she tried to use the British accent. And then, so hit at the end, when he says British accent, I was thinking people would relate that one line. But then everybody's going, no, she never had a British accent. I go, no, she wasn't supposed to have the British accent. It was just a one-liner, which made it easy for him to recognize that was his wife. But anyway, so it got kind of, I didn't have enough time to explain it. We were running out of footage and had to cut some stuff back.
So. Fair enough. I thought I had completely misheard that the character was meant to be British. And I was like, this actress is not even attempting a British accent. So I thought I'd missed something too.
Well, originally I asked Heidi if she could do a British accent. Okay. And she had a coach and everything working with her, and she just didn't feel comfortable doing the British accent. I said, okay, well, let's just use one line. We'll just use the one line and that would be fine. By the way, I know she had a short part, but she did an amazing job. You know, people are ripping her up and saying she did a bad job because, you know, I think just because it was so short and sweet and there at the beginning, but she did a really great job of acting.
I will say that all your cast members seem remarkably game for the entire production, including, it was interesting that you made your hero a Jewish atheist astrophysicist. Can you talk about that, where that decision came from?
Well, I kind of wanted all my characters to be different, and I really wanted an atheist to be my main person. I didn't want, like, a Christian... goody-goody two-shoe boy being in the movie or anything like that. I wanted characters that were kind of real to life all the time. I mean, the only person we have that's really a Christian in the whole movie besides Brand is Amy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we had to have that one person, I thought, representing the strong side. But she's, like, very non-judgmental and everything, so that's what I wanted.
And also their decision at the end to save Brand's family. So by doing that, they're never going to spend the time together. So Ram and Amy are sacrificing their relationship together to save Bran's family because they're not going to have any of the memories of their time together. Would that be right? Or what they've all gone through?
That would be right, unless you could read a longer script where they also sent messages to each other too when he went back in time and stuff. But so they if there's a sequel, they will meet each other. Or we'll just take them to the future where that one timeline cuts off. So,
speaking about sequels, I do have an idea. Granted, okay. It's very close to the Terminator, where bad guys go through time and they try and kill Jesus before he's even born by targeting the Virgin Mary.
That is a possibility, but again, you got to have a motive for it, okay? And if why would you want to do that unless you're just an atheist? You just want to go back in time and. But then if you do that, you may destroy who you are. I mean, the timeline, you may never exist, right? So the only thing that made any really sense at all is if you killed Jesus or if you didn't allow Jesus to have a resurrection, because Muslims believe that Jesus is a prophet.
Right.
And so that works. All these other theories I came up with and tried, because I didn't want to step on too many toes. They didn't really pan out.
There is that trope that happens in a lot of these films. So a main trope of faith films that I happen to see is ones that are based around the rapture.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the faith will disappear and there are a band of atheists or Catholics or Jews or whoever didn't make the cut, essentially, wandering and get around going, but I'm pretty good. What did I do wrong? Just because I, you know, teased my evangelical work colleague one time. And it always kind of ends with like a handful or like the main hero, like whether it's Nicolas Cage in Left Behind, kind of coming round, kind of going, if only I'd gone to church with my wife every now and then instead of staying in and, you know, having a fryer. So the Ram kind of being an atheist at the beginning, but by the end, he has witnessed something miraculous where at the end they're like, you're not quite the atheist you were, Ram, are you? And he's like, well, you know, you see some things, it changes your mind. So it is kind of like, on one hand, it's like, you know exactly where this character's going. He will have found some sort of faith by the end.
Yeah. I mean, what's funny about what you just said is that if the actual rapture were to happen, then I'm sure that most atheists like myself will be like, oh, well, there's the proof. Right? Yeah, yeah. The people have buggered off to apparently heaven. So, hey, yeah. This is all true then. Okay, now I believe.
Do you know, I don't think I would. I mean, this keeps coming up on the shed, but I'd just be like, oh, fuck, Thanos has done the thing.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Well, again, he sort of talks about that. I think it was a fairly profound point. He said he was talking about, he sort of wrote in these get outs for Ram about why, you know, of there always being some ambiguity or reason for him to doubt. So, you know, during the resurrection, he observes, oh, that looked like, you know, it was a teleportation blast or, you know, whatever they were called, you know, to put some doubt in his mind that maybe that's what the resurrection could have been. It could have been tied up in the time travel situation. And then he sort of made the observation that, you know, no scientific evidence, or maybe even something like the rapture, something that radical, wouldn't fundamentally change people's belief systems. And I think that's probably true. I mean, unfortunately, there seems to be a lot more going into what people believe than just evidence or even what they see with their own experiences. You know what I mean? So I agree with you, Ty, that yes, Ram's trajectory does follow that sort of trope where it's implied that he has more maybe faith than he did at the beginning, but it's still less of a conversion story than I think we're used to in these sorts of films. And it's not forced on him. He's just sort of like, oh man, like you say, I've seen some things, but what does it all mean? You know, it's time travel maybe. So
yeah,
that was a little more nuanced.
Yes, exactly. And that word nuance, again, not completely accurate in this film.
No,
but,
no.
But it was what kind of made me seek out the director, because I was expecting just terrorists go back and, you know, the students go back and they're trying to protect Jesus or something, and it would be very A to B. But then when the film started getting into, oh, we've got multiple timelines and various versions of the character. And, you know, we've got one timeline where Christianity never happened and this is a world without forgiveness. And, oh, they've just left that version of Felix there to die. And but then we've got
Can we talk about a couple of other Felixes.
Yeah, yeah, let's gloss over the exploring Andrew's God versus Thanos.
But that was when I was like, I've got to talk to this director because he is putting a lot more science fiction into this than I would have ever thought I would have seen.
Okay.
And that's kind of what made me track him down because it, for a sci-fi faith film, I found it was a lot more science fiction than faith.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
Krishna, I tried to jot down the timelines and I got really confused.
Commendable.
That's because none of them make sense at all. Like if you try
Have you seen Primer?
Primer, yes. No.
Primer is my favorite time travel movie and it boggles the mind, but there are attempts at chronology.
Chronicling?
Chronicling the chronicle, maybe. Chronicling.
Anyway, Krishna. Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. Okay, so interestingly enough, right at the start when they're talking about whatever it is that they're trying to build or make in their super secret lab, they keep talking about the matter transportation, I think is what they keep saying, right? Matter transportation. And that was like an interesting phrase to use because they didn't just use teleportation, and I'm almost interested to know why he made the choice to
transporter.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. We're all, you know, here you just picked up a cup and put it from A to B. There you go, matter transporter. So what? But obviously, what they were really trying to do was to teleport something from A to B without traveling the intervening distance, kind of thing. And then what happens is, with no explanation, really, they didn't even do a hand wavy gloss over. It was just like, well, we were trying to build a teleporter, but what we have built is a time machine somehow.
No, Tushna, then, the explanation was they hadn't taken into account the speed of time.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Now, that is a trope that actually I've seen in other sci-fi films.
Have you?
Like The Sound of Thunder. I brought that up because that is something where they make a change in time and then the ripples of time take time to get to the present time. I'm saying time a lot, but that was where I was like, oh, I've seen this before, because when they went back, I was like, this should be instantaneous changing, like Back to the Future or, you know, a thousand other time travel films. But then when they were talking about the ripples of time, I was like, oh, I've seen this happen in some sci-fi films before.
There's an analogy there, isn't there, Tushna? Like gravitational waves have a rate of travel. And if the sun were to disappear right now, it'd take 8 minutes for us to notice, both from the light and the gravity effects, yeah?
Yeah, that's because we found out that almost definitely gravitational waves move at the speed of light. And that was a recent discovery after we detected gravitational waves, thanks to LIGO. So yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I must admit that I haven't seen this trope before. And I kind of like when they mention it, when he kind of says the speed of time, I was like, oh God, my physics brain just broke. I'm kind of like, cannot compute. Because, I mean, but it's a really interesting fundamental force to play with like that. So I was actually willing to give it to them. I mean, I actually can't even begin to think of the actual repercussions for what that would mean, even in terms of the most exotic physics that we have, you know, from a theoretical point of view. But that's something that they definitely do run with, and that's how these different timelines occur and then sort of fizzle out. And for some reason, if you're in that, I mean, what I couldn't understand was that the entire timeline fizzles out, why in some cases certain people or objects fizzled out of that timeline. I got confused by that. But I think at that point, that was when
never existed.
If that entire timeline had collapsed and just whatever, poofed out of existence, that's fine. But then if I remember correctly, there were certain people, like, you know, Ram goes back to some timeline and he's really cocky because he knows those people are going to disappear. And I'm not sure how they disappear, but he doesn't if he's in that timeline.
But this is, isn't this just kind of like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, where they're like, dude, remember to put the bin here, and then it just happens. It's that kind of
hand-waving, slight, magic thing. Exactly. Yeah. And then the other thing, of course, that you kind of, again, tried to ask him about, but I don't think he really gave you an answer, the director, Ty, was about, so you can go back in time, but not only are they going back in time, they're going back to a particular geolocation time, right? And they try to explain that with the locator thingies, or you'll get lost, which is, okay, again, they've tried. You know, there's a nod, an acknowledgement to, like, you get lost, how are you going to make your way back? But again, they don't explain that at all. So, I mean, I took it as that's what he had 3 days to figure out, where exactly to... So it became a mix of a teleportation device come time travel time device.
Yeah, that was the thing I was going to let go, to be honest, because if you're telling this story, you got to let something slide. But
we could rip this apart in a really science nerdy way if we wanted to.
But of course you could.
The challenge of, if you're traveling through time, you need to move yourself because the Earth will be in a different place and all of that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think it's worthy of that, because it's just a rollicking time traveling fun plot.
Yeah, there was this hilarious moment where they were like, oh, right at the beginning when they were trying to, I can't remember, when they were either trying to perfect their just matter transporter, or maybe just after they had the first success, but he realized that, oh, we're getting it wrong because time, haven't thought about time. There's a thing where they just refer to a quantum object and it's a chair.
Yeah.
So
it's the chair that wrecks it, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. So just for those listeners who are maybe more of the sci-fi fans and not that much of the science fans and are actually wondering about what we can and can't do, just when it comes to teleportation, this is something that I kind of have to remind people about all the time, because people are like, oh, but I read something about physicists being able to teleport at least this or at least that, even if it's just a few atoms. And this is something that, like, I think is so important that people understand, that we've never actually teleported a physical atom. It doesn't quite work like that. Even with the most advanced teleportation experiments that they have, you don't teleport the actual physical thing. You teleport the key properties of that thing. So the way I explain it is that if there's you in your house and me in my house, what you're actually teleporting is that it's the color of your hair or something like that. So if you imagine that all our key properties, physical appearances, color of our eyes and color of my hair and the shoes I'm wearing, kind of thing. So if two objects are perfectly entangled and you teleport their properties, so if I'm wearing, if I have pink hair and I'm wearing purple shoes, and if we can teleport, then what happens is you then have pink hair and purple shoes.
Oh, okay.
I'm right in my huge fear of Star Trek-like teleportation, in that they are actually giant murder machines, yeah?
Yeah, which, you know, my favorite
machines
film
which murder
that
you.
Deals with that, yes, because it's there's this thing, this awesome thing that really sounds so sci-fi, if you ask me. And, of course, Ty, you're going to tell me, what's the name? Magic Magicians film?
The Prestige.
Prestige, thank you very much. They play with that brilliantly, right? I love that in The Prestige, exactly what you just said, Steve. But so there's a thing in quantum mechanics called the no cloning theorem, and that means that two of you cannot exist at any given time. The original has to disappear for the copy to survive, and that's how then the copy becomes the original, because there is no original anymore. And so that's what the transport means. It doesn't mean you have actually physically gone from here to here. What means is I make a perfect copy of you from here to here, and this you ceases to exist. Or at least that's what happens with the particles with which we do this stuff, because they're all identical. There's no difference.
Proposition,
Mr.
Andrew Boschedban. Could we cut the time travel discussion there for now? Because I think that this movie doesn't address it in enough detail. Yeah. And do an episode where we do a synopsis of all of the time travel in sci-fi, and we really get nerdy about all of this, because totally. I want to hear more of Tushner talking about that. Yeah. And it might be a bit of a niche episode, but I think at least half of our audience will want that.
It's like Endgame says, every time, basically Back to the Future is bullshit, and that's not how time travel works. Yeah. So
I think we should do that, and we'll call the episode Spooky Cloning at a Distance. And,
I love it.
Spooky murder cloning.
Okay, let's do that. Let's have a time travel episode. It was suggested that we do themed episodes that were themed on something like time travel rather than on a film. So let's do one on time travel.
There was one other thing I wanted to say, which was to Ty about something. I don't know if you noticed then, Ty, but there was one thing that the director said in your interview with him that shocked me, properly shocked me. I was just like, what? Where did that come from? And that was where you were talking about this, the whole thing about why was it Muslim extremists and why couldn't it have been Christian extremists and that kind of thing. Yeah. And he was talking about the reasoning. And then he said, because you were talking about another film where you could go back even further in time and kill Mary so that, or kill Jesus when he's just born. You were talking about that, weren't you?
Yeah, a sequel. Go back and kill the Virgin Mary, Terminator.
So yeah, just keep going back further and further, exactly. He said, oh, but the only people who would want to do that would be atheists. And I was just like, what? You know? And that's his rationing there was that by doing that, you would... his rationing was that what atheists want to do is wipe out all religion, and B, he seemed to think that by wiping out Christianity even, you would actually wipe out all religion. But he said basically the only people who would want to go back and do that, the logical reasoning for that, would be atheists, because they would want to wipe out all religion. Mm. And that, like, that to me was like, I'm like, I'm an atheist, I know lots of atheists, and it's such a key misunderstanding of what, and also it made me think about like this misunderstanding, you know, this big thing about that people have that I find that I have to correct them all the time about like atheism equals no morality or something like that.
That's something that I raised because he had that bit where they go to the future, and because Christianity never happened, it's a world without forgiveness. And I was like, the issue with that is you're essentially saying that forgiveness is inherently tied to Christianity and not any type of
morality. In the film, at least, that was more like a supernatural or metaphorical forgiveness. And like he addresses, he doesn't mean day-to-day interactions between people. It's sort of
the divine force of forgiveness.
Or some the inherent teachings of Jesus or something that had a detrimental effect on the world.
Yeah, and so it looked like Western society rose and then fell, because there were skyscrapers that were then just ruins. And
exactly. So civilization had still risen and peaked to where we are, and then something had happened where some guy just wasn't willing to let it go.
I do not forgive you.
Yeah, nuclear war happened.
I thought just we went far enough into the future, you know, that's it.
That's where we're heading anyway. But Jordan, I want to address this kind of caricature thing, both of atheists and of Muslims, albeit with one sentence explaining they're just extremists. And to a certain extent, the way that I thought about the director until I heard the interview, to be fair. And is that how we all think about each other from the other groups?
Yes. Within reason. So I think generally, even if you try to be really even-handed about what other people believe, you don't have the same belief system as them. So all you can really have in your mind is a version of what they believe, but it's always going to be in counterbalance to obviously what your own beliefs are. So if you found anything that they believe to be convincing, you would believe them as well. So they would be your beliefs. So there needs to be some kind of straw man version of it that you hold in your mind in order to kind of make sense of it. Otherwise you would adopt the belief as your own. So certainly, I think a lot of the times atheists have a very warped view of what Christians or people of any faith believe, or the way that faith works. It can be frustrating for Christians, and I'm sure Muslims or any theist, to have an atheist talk about, well, you go keep on believing in your old man in the sky, in the same way that it's frustrating for atheists to have this idea that, well, you can't be moral without God, because neither of those aligns with what is actually what we believe. As I say, it's frustrating for Christian. If you say the old man in the sky thing, they just think, ah, look, it's proof. You don't know what I believe. That's such a ridiculous characterization of what my concept of God is. It just proves that you have no kind of experience of what it is I believe. So I can kind of dismiss everything you're saying. And I think that kind of miscommunication happens on all sides. I would almost go as far as, without having believed something yourself, it's impossible for you to really know what it is like to believe that thing. So that is my own bias, having come from that experience. Yeah. I remember what it was like to believe in Christianity, and now I know what it's like to be an atheist. Yeah. So of course I'm doing it right now. I'm saying, you know, my worldview is constructed off of that narrative. And I think that is the key insight to a lot of things that won't ring true to loads of people. Yeah, and you know, the list goes on to the way this kind of has ramifications in politics and science communication and so on, but it's pretty complicated.
Again, I think it's nuance is the key, and unfortunately today's world doesn't seem to embrace any sort of nuance. It's extreme views on all sides, and anyone who stands in the middle ground is a fence sitter. But I thought that was interesting that Jim Carroll raised that he'd been getting a lot of slack from his Christian friends and a lot of grief from people in the Christian community for his film. I thought that was kind of
nobody's
fascinating.
Happy.
No one's happy. So, yeah, exactly.
So the IMDb ratings for this movie really verify your hypothesis there, Ty. It's 30% 1 out of 10. And 30% 10 out of 10, and everything else kind of smeared around the middle. So I think I'm going to be in the minority here by giving it a solid 5 out of 10, which is the second least popular rating after 7 out of 10.
It's the Last Jedi of Christian sci-fi films.
Just split people. Are you saying there are other Christian sci-fi films that everyone's all on board with? And The Empire. Next episode, what's the Empire guys? Strikes Back of Christian sci-fi films?
It's The Empire Strikes Back.
It's true. Now you're gonna That's be, all about resurrection be, and.
Oh, religious. I don't know. It could be one of the Narnia films. Don't forget.
Mm. You
know, Aslan Jesus.
Probably Lord of the Rings, because that's it's quite Catholic in its imagery and so on. I would hesitate to call that Christian because it's sort of pan mythological. Yeah. But it's
What's it? Druid, isn't it?
There are tropes.
It's certainly beloved by Christians, though, because Tolkien was, you know, quite a religious man himself. He was best BFFs with C.S. Lewis, who, of course, stole his ideas for Chronicles of Narnia.
Was he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were in a club, a literary club together.
Yeah.
Stephen Lewis Colbert, who's a devoted Catholic, is the biggest Lord of the Rings fan you'll ever find. So, yeah.
Are we going to discuss his weird explanation about the one phrase in British by the wife of...
You totally should.
I'm on his side about that. I'm sorry.
What?
What? How?
No, because everything else she said was with an American accent.
Indeed, so, but why did she put on that accent? And why would her then ghost voice decide to put on the British accent?
Okay, the ghost voice I'll give you, but the... Oh, you're my hero sort of thing is
I didn't even register that she had done a British accent until he said that British accent of yours gets me every time, and I was like, hang on, what did I just miss? She's not British.
Maybe she's giving him some car driving sexy times. Maybe he likes it.
Oh god.
Well, he sort of suggested two things. One that got kind of lost in translation in the production stage. You know, he'd written it in as a bigger thing. And secondly, and most importantly, I think she was scripted to be an English character, a British character, and then basically the actress wasn't comfortable doing the accent, so they made it a throwaway line that was apparently big enough to be a message from the grave.
Is that what he meant?
I saw it as her just putting on an accent because it was funny in that moment.
And that it's reflected by his response, because he said, oh, you know, that goddamn, well, no, he didn't, but you know, that mighty fine British accent.
That bloody British accent.
Well, because, truth.
So then are we saying that basically she used to put that on as a funny thing, so that's an in-joke between the couple?
I think she did in the bedroom.
Oh, yeah. God. The kids were in the car.
Yeah, I think it used to be something she said, which is why he's right. Like... And if I'm not mistaken, it's the same phrase, like, be a hero or you're my hero. And then, which is why he's like, the voice is saying, you know, you're my hero. And then he's like, what did it sound like? He's like, I don't know, but British. And he's like, got it. I know who that is. That's my dead wife.
Yeah, because she once said something in an English accent in a car.
that one time.
Good God. But
I think there are two questions or two statements that become questions, which will remain with this film forever, which is why, and I don't understand. So I'd like to thank Ty, Tushner, Steve, and Jordan for joining me here in the virtual Cosmic Shed. And
thanks, Andrew.
It is always a pleasure. And let's leave the last words to the man who wrote the film.
Do you have plans for a sequel at the moment?
Well, I'm going to see how everything pans out financially by the time all the money comes in. If there's plenty of money, then we will probably make a sequel. If not, then this is my last gasp at making motion pictures.
I wish you all the luck. And thank you so much for talking to me, Jim. It's been really fascinating learning about what went into making this film and everything behind it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
No problem, thank you.
And thank you very much for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.
This podcast is brought to you by the Stimulus Network.